So welcome to the Kits Dental Marketing Podcast, the first episode ever. And how can you not have Dr. Jerry Lanier here? When you're talking about Kits marketing, everything that I know, and I know a lot, is from this man. And from not theories, watching, even though you have a great book, but from watching and learning and being amazed at everything that you've done, especially because sometimes you're like, you do something, and in my mind, I'm like, what? What was that about? And then later on, it makes sense. It's like, wow, I would have never done that, and I would have lost.
Well, I've learned a lot from you, though, man, you know, because the thing is just adapting over the years because, of course, marketing fundamentals remain the same, but, you know, the principles remain the same, but the manifestations change because everything changed. You know, coming back in the game, I was still stuck on doing things like billboards and so forth, and I had to change because I'd been out the game a little bit. So, you know, it was good that we hooked up again and then just started boom, 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 and got back on top because that's the main thing is moving, staying on top.
So what do you think has changed in a big way, in a macro way, from when you had Kits Dental Care and you were, you know, in the streets, you were doing a lot of, you had to, there was no social media like it's now. So to now, like what do you think is one of the main macro things that has changed?
Well, I think we still want to do the community-based marketing. That's something that I can't get away from because that's who we are, really community. But the main thing that has changed is this. Because everywhere and everybody is like this. You know what's amazing? People can't even cross the street. They're doing this in the middle of the street and cars are coming and I'm thinking, gosh, look up. But they don't. Everything is here. So everything has to be here. It doesn't matter about the billboards and bus stop benches anymore. If you're not here and you're not relevant most of the time. So you gotta be out there and do some community-based events. But still you have to know if this is where the attention is, you gotta find a way to get to where the attention is.
And how do you feel about traditional media, you know, such as television and these, you know, the things that were always radio to now digital? Is there something that's outweighing one or the other or?
Well, I like television and TV ads, but that's for me because I watch TV, whereas in my house we have, it's a big house, so everybody has their own room. And my wife, she's pretty much Netflix and different things like that. I'm old school, I'm TV pretty much, and I see ads. But I know for my son and my daughter, they don't even have DirecTV, don't need it. They just sign up for all of the different apps or whatever and they just go and watch what they want. So I know to communicate with them, everybody kind of has that different thing. If it's a grandparent and a lot of people on Facebook, but then there's people like Instagram, TikTok, that, all the social media, and you have to have somebody that really understands that. But of course, there's still some of the old school TV and people are selling ads late night and they run the same product. I think if you got big budget and you're really gonna get it out there to a lot of people, a lot of companies are still going that route and it works. I think you spend more than being, you know, the ones that are strategic that can do the online thing and go boom, hit it. I think of course you're gonna save a lot of money. But you have to know what you're doing or hire people that know what they're doing to make it happen.
And how much emphasis you put in on the creative side? Because obviously there's the budget that you mentioned. You can spend $1 million and reach a lot of people. Yet, what are you showing them and how effective that message is? How if you were to put a weight into budget versus the creative message that you're putting out, which one do you think will be most important from your perspective?
Well, I think the creative is huge. You have to, but then again, frequency is one of those things, say in marketing, advertising, if you can get your message out there to enough people over and over again that it locks in so that whenever your service is needed, you're top of mind. That's one of the things I think you do have to have enough repetition that you get it out there.
All right, so let's do that. Yeah. If you were to 1, 2, 3, repetition, budget, creative message, and put them in order.
Well, I think a repetition is number one. I think creative is like number two. However, creative is getting kind of crazy because now people do sometimes creative, and it's so far out there, you don't even know what they're selling or what the call to action is and so forth. I don't really get that because if I'm spending money, I want to at least kind of let people know exactly what it is that I'm doing, and I want to repeat it over and over again. And I think it worked well. I'm not as blatant as, you know, like some of these attorneys, you know, call me and I can get you all. I don't, you know, but I think that works. They, you know, some of them get their name out there and they just keep hammering. And of course, I think that's good. But then, you know, some of the big budget, even the halftime games and so forth, Super Bowl, you know, sometimes they're so far out there, they're over people's head, I think. So, but obviously works with some.
But in the kids' dental world, right? So you're saying is that you're a practical messaging, where you can be funny, you can be creative, but still, this is what we're selling.
Yeah.
Kids dentistry. Call us to make an appointment. It's got to be in there.
It's got to be in there. And I think some people are effective with, I see some of the implant guys, you know. You show somebody with a beautiful smile, somebody whose mouth that was really messed up before, and all of a sudden, you know, got a beautiful smile. Call me, doctor something, the implant specialist. I think you hit them with enough of that, that works. The same thing with kids. You show something, and, you know, whereas people are seeing happy kids, you know, and kids see other kids. And those kinds of things, and whereas the kids want to come, and then the parent are kind of pulled, and you have to market to both the parent and 90% of the time it's the mom, because they normally want to bring the kids to the dentist. So you're kind of targeting the moms, but the kids still make some of the decisions. If they like a place and other kids come there and they like the kid environment and parents, that's another thing, the way, the look, the feel, so forth. The parent is sold on that. The kids are sold on whether the other kids there playing and having fun and so forth. So we try to get past that sterile environment, you know, just especially, you know, for the entertainment part. Get kids playing, get happy kids. And try to keep happy moms, and then let them spread, become our advocate. You know, once they leave, and they can go out and spread the same message. So I think the thing that you brought to our organization, the patient experience thing, is huge. You know, you got to really focus on that patient experience out there.
Absolutely, Doc. Because you know, learning from before, you know, because Dr. Lear had kids' dental care. Huge in Los Angeles. He sold that off and he's retired right now with like almost 5 offices. That's he's working more than most working people, and he's retired. Yeah. But that's a whole other story. But what I've learned is the audiences as well, the way you speak to a parent is different than you speak to a child.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to speak to both. So
right.
I even as a dentist, you know, because this is more geared towards a dentist that maybe is looking into getting better marketing for themselves, it's that you have to, the parent is looking at your bond with that kid.
Right.
And they're looking like, oh, my kid, you know, connects with his dentist. Yet, that kid is really connecting with you. So you really got to connect with the kid.
Yeah.
But you're really doing an act for the parent.
Yeah, oversee and overhear, because that's the thing I used to train my doctors on, is that you really... You're like on stage, you know, like the thing, the world's a stage and we're all actors. And when they're sitting there, the parent is the audience, but they're watching how you're interacting with the kid. And they're seeing whether you have the confidence, whether you have the rapport to deal with the kid. And then they're watching and judging. And they said, he's pretty good with kids. Or this person doesn't have that kind of thing. But, you know, the doctor has to be deliberate and they have to know I'm in character. And a lot of people in different fields, all, you know, when you come to work, if you shed whoever you are and leave it in the car and just come in and get in character, and now you're on stage and just play your role, then people start to believe, because after a while just doing that character every day, you become pretty much that character, you know. And I think that that's a part that a lot of people miss, is how to get in character. And just an example, when I was doing treatment and working with kids, I would always come in and when I'm talking to a parent, look at what my treatment plan is, and then I look at my watch. And then I always, kind of tap my watch. It's going to take about this long. I'm going to have this person. She's going to be right here with me. We're going to do this. We're going to explain to them. And I just had my routine, and it was like my script. And, you know, it was something that's comforting, and you do it over and over again. You own it, you know, and that's the thing I like about. I just like doing dentistry and interacting with the parent, the kid, making them feel comfortable, the parent feel comfortable. And then, you know, you even when we leave, we're selling them on going out and get your family and friends and, you know, refer somebody like that. So, yeah.
So it's a team, because also in the play that you're playing, and you're the main character as a dentist, but all of your staff become side players.
Right. And that's the thing. And you really like when you have your team trained and you walk in and then, here he is, Dr. Lanier is here, or Dr. whomever, and Mom, you're so lucky that we have this doctor today. And they, you know, so once the team is, everybody's interacting, know their roles and their script, it just goes so well, you know, and then it comes down to that patient experience. They had a good experience. And now we can ask for those 5-star reviews. You know, if you didn't do it right, you don't even want to ask for a review. They're like, you know, don't, please don't review, you know, so.
But speaking of doing it right, what I've seen is that a lot of parents will forgive bad treatment, but they won't forgive bad service.
Right, yeah.
Some parents will come back, you know, you might have messed up some treatment. They might give you another chance.
Yeah.
If they feel that it wasn't done on purpose. But bad service is something that's just like a no-no. They just leave.
Yeah. And people will, even making them wait, which is a big thing in dental offices everywhere, is the wait time. But if you will preempt that by going out and explaining to the person, we're running a little bit behind. Because, you know, you sit on the other side, you're like, wow, they haven't said anything. Somebody else came in and they're going in. I've been sitting here and all of that. Somebody has to be doing some proactive patient relations, getting up and going, communicating, and always knowing what's going on, and don't wait for the person to come up and complain. We are already intercepted. And like you said, at that point, they forgive you.
Yes.
Yeah.
But because treatment, you can always say, hey, you know, there was a complication. Service, they know, no, I know how to be treated, and this isn't the way.
Right.
They don't need to be experts or doctors to know. They're in the mouth, they don't really know. Outside, they know. And then one thing that I've also learned, and one thing that the Kids to Dentists, we helped implement was the, you know, when people are upset, you gotta really deal with the feelings, not with the facts.
Right.
Someone comes up to the front desk and they go, hey, I've been waiting 3 hours. And you know that person's been there 20 minutes. You can't argue with time.
Yeah.
No, you came in at 12:50. That, because they're not arguing about whether it was 3 hours or 2 hours or 1 hour. They're arguing about they feel they waited a long time. And if you don't address the feelings, then you're not addressing the real cause, right?
And that requires training the staff. Because if you just go based on allowing them to do what they think, and you don't have a certain kind of protocol, if this, then that, when this happens, this is how we treat it, then you're kind of going on, you're letting them kind of improvise as they go, then you don't know what you're gonna get. It's gonna be chaotic, you know? So the big thing that we try to implement is systems, and having systems to address this and that, and so that you get, and that's the part where it's, sometimes I have a little problem when doctors come in and they say, well, I want to have autonomy. And autonomy could mean anything, you know. I want to be able to direct or just walk up and say, or come in late. You want to have sets of rules and guidelines, and that covers marketing, advertising, greeting, dismissal, everything, how we do it. This is how we do it, and we document it, and then we get better. Yeah.
So when you get these doctors, because a lot of the doctors that maybe don't have their own practice yet, and they're thinking and going into it, and maybe they're going to have help coming in at some point, how would you say, are you more towards a flexibility, or are you like my way or the highway, or is there a balance somewhere?
There is a balance, I think, especially when it comes down to just clinical treatment, as long as, you know, everything has a standard of care. And then when it comes down to how you run the practice, there's what's always best practices. And the thing when it comes to doctors is we come to an agreement, best practices. It's best practice that if you have a 9 o'clock patient that you're there at 8:45, you know, that would be best practice rather than 9:45, you know, patient been waiting all that time. If it's, you know, so I just think there's a lot of things that you want to have in best practices, and you really want to have management be able to make certain calls, this patient, because the doctors are doing this, their attention is here. When they come up, you want somebody like a floor supervisor that already had the case already worked up. They know what patient is next. And the doctor, they can say, okay, doc, they look, here's your chart. This is one. Or we got an exam now. Can you come out? And if they allow that, then they're working within a system, because this person has their job. And if they're doing it well, then it's going to make his or her job much easier. And then it'll make the whole patient experience easy, because everything has been thought out. Not that we're going to think everything out, but as you go and you encounter new things, now you can write a new protocol. Like, wow, hadn't thought of that. Glad that we brought that up, you know. There was a situation just the other day that we encountered, and it seemed as though it was a problem. But when I listened to it, I was like, damn, I hadn't thought about that. We can, let's make a rule or something so that we don't encounter that again. You know, that's part of the good thing. I know a lot of times people think, I don't want to have the problem. But if you don't have, you know, you don't encounter the problem, you're not going to come up with a solution. And solutions are what make you valuable. You know, you come up, you solve the problem, and now you can expand and keep moving. So
what you're saying is investing on developing your team, for example, to have that person that knows who's next, so that dentists can focus on this part. They're not worried. They're kind of relaxed because they know this person got that.
Right. Yeah.
So how do you even find these people, or do you train them, or do you already get them trained?
Well, some of both. You want somebody that has had some experience, but you still want to train them on your systems, because if a person just brings what they brought from somebody else, Dr. Smith, Dr. X office, you're like, yeah, but can we change this part? This is, I like that, but here, this is the way we're gonna do it. So what I think is writing the book for your prototype is, this is the way we do it. You know, it's almost like music. You can listen to it, but if you're a good musician, you don't steal it, but you borrow some lines from it, you know, and like, now this is my song, you know. He wrote it, but I changed it, and now it's mine, you know. And then you get your own sound, and it sounds like you. So I think that's the way, building that brand like that, you know, and customized experience. Because one person, the main thing is that when the patient or the customer walks away, is like, wow, that was different. I like that experience.
So then the question that I think every dentist wants to know, how do you fill up your schedule? How do you fill up your offices with patients? And I know, you know, it's ups and downs and normal things, but in general, how do you keep those appointments coming in? What are some of the marketing strategies that you use?
Well, I think first you when you're doing, like we try to do a launch for a new office, and then you want really, that's the time you want to have a marketing blitz. You want to go all out, all everything that you can for a period of time. And therefore, a lot of people don't want to invest that. But if you're going to get a rocket ship to break through the atmosphere, you got to expend a lot of rocket fuel. So first, you want to get it out there. But then you want to have a program, once they come in, that they start to those are the ones that are going out there. They're your emissaries, and they're going out there and getting more patients. So you have a plan that when they come in, we're going to make them so happy. And not only that, we're going to have a call to action. We're going to ask for a referral. And we're going to say, ask for a review, ask for a referral, and then tell them about us. Send, and then we're going to communicate with them on and on. Because, you know, there's only so many new patients in your area, and then you want to get them each time. And especially when you're seeing kids. Kids are going to grow older, and they're going to move on. You got to be getting newer kids, you know. But it's good when you get somebody, and I've had some. The parents said, well, you are my dentist, you know, or even I had a grandmother that she had brought two generations, her kids and her grandkids to me. I was like, damn, I'm getting old, you know, but it's a pretty good feeling because you know that obviously you're doing something right if they keep coming back, or even if you're a dentist and your staff leaves and they're working at another office, but they're bringing the kids to you, you're like, oh, okay, we must be doing something right.
Yeah, if your staff's not bringing their kids to your office,
that's the indication. Flag, yes. It is.
Well, and you know, one thing about speaking of that is because I'm from the school that, you know, there's a balance between new patient and retention. Although I give retention more of a bigger value because you don't have to remarket to these people. They already came in, you already have them. You don't need to spend money bringing them back. All you got to do is set an appointment. Hopefully, they want to come back. Where the new patient is you getting, you know, it's a lottery. You don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
If they're going to even come in, you're spending money trying to get them in. So, retention in your point of view versus new patients, because I know you always need new patients, especially in kids dentistry. But at some point, if let's say 100 patients every day make a reappointment, and they come back every 6 months, eventually you'll have your office filled without even having two new patients. You wouldn't even have room for new patients. Or,
yeah, no, this is true. And new patients, however, if you do good work and it's still holding, then the new patients, the recall is less valuable because you're not going to generate as much as, especially with kids in underserved areas where they come in and they need a lot of treatment and you do it. Of course, you know, the revenues that you generate are going to be higher from the new patient, but you want to keep those recalls in there because a lot of times, you know, things are happening as they're growing and you want to be able to fill the schedule. The thing is mostly it's going to be recall and then some new patients added in between. You sprinkle those in between. Some of them may not have too much treatment, but every now and then, if you have enough volume, you have some that need quite a substantial amount of treatment, and then you get them into, you're very productive, but then you mix that in with your recall and so forth, and that's how we make money. So we're not really pushing. I know a lot of places push for production. I always say if we do enough patients, it's just natural. As if you're seeing enough patients, and some of them are new patients, of course somebody's going to need some big treatment, and especially in underserved areas like, and in California, most states, kids that are in underserved areas haven't been seeing a dentist on a regular basis, so they need a lot of treatment. So doctors don't have to do a lot of big treatment every day, and especially now, the staff auxiliaries can do a lot of the work. Doctors are getting paid sometimes almost for nothing because they just do the exam. Auxiliaries doing most of the treatment on kids, you know, the cleaning and the sealants and so forth. And doctors are still getting their percentage on it. So it's fairly easy. And then you get a treatment case and, you know, you do a one quadrant or a big or maybe two quadrants and bring them back and do. Yeah, it could be lucrative like that.
And then in a smaller town, because I think you probably moved from one of the biggest metropolises in the world to smaller town.
Yeah.
And let's say you're, for the sake of argument, like, you know, there's a 5,000 kids in one town and you open up there. And because my point of view is that eventually those 5,000 kids are going to either come through your door or have heard of you or have seen you. So if you don't capture those 5,000 kids, especially in the smaller populations where the population is not growing or constantly changing like LA, people in and out. These are old towns that their grandma, grandma, they all live there.
Yeah.
How do you, not steal, but how do you capitalize on the market share? How do you go in as a practice and take it from Dr. Smith that's been there for 40 years and Dr. Jim, you know that?
Yeah. Most of the time what I'm looking at before I open a practice is the demographics and the need and how much competition I have. And is it someone who's actually serving my niche? You know, even though it's kids, we do, unlike a lot of pediatric specialists that will not accept Medicaid, we accept Medicaid, all insurances and so forth. So now this doctor over here is exclusive and does not. So really, we're not necessarily competing because they don't want to necessarily see this underprivileged ones and so forth. And then we have beautiful offices and well-trained staff, so we get some of theirs. But my goal always have been, I don't want your patients, but I want everything that's mine. And I consider everything on this side of town is mine. So that's the way I look at it. If, you know, if you happen to be there, then you're in my zone. Not that I'm coming to your zone. I'm here and you're in my zone and we're gonna try to take everything that we can, you know? And I still wanna shake your hand and have lunch. Some doctors don't want to speak or whatever if they feel you're competitive. But I think, you know, it's like with the McDonald's and Burger King, they line up across the street and just compete, you know. And so I don't have a problem with the other guys, you know. It's like we're ballers. You're in the game. You better bring your A game because I'm coming to play, you know.
I mean, we could do this for 24 hours and you're full of knowledge and stories. We haven't even gone to your stories, but... You know, for example, a website, right? Like Google Business now, all of these things to supplement, and I feel like they're supplemental to your marketing. Your marketing is really your service.
Yeah,
you want
yeah.
people to go, oh my God, they're so good.
Yeah.
There's no better advertising than that. Yet, you want to supplement it and you want to compete with your competitors. So, for example, when's the last time you went to an actual website that for whatever reason, that you're looking for some skates, because I know you like to skate.
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you search on Google for skates, or do you go to skates.com?
No, I actually, I do, most of the things I get there through search. And then, you know, of course, you might visit the website, or if it's something specific, you know, like apps now, the bigger websites like Amazon or whatever, or if it's just something that I'm clicking and it directs me to their website so that I can see the menu or something. But that's the way I get to most of the websites.
So how do you feel that applies to dentistry? Because I always feel like dentistry has been one step behind in all of these marketing. AI, for example, coming up now. I think dentistry... It's done a lot of advances. It's nowhere near what health, you know.
I think that still, I think the brand and the name, if the name is catchy and it sticks in someone's mind, like Kids to Dentists, I try to brand that, or Kids Dental Care, I try to brand that so that it gets in the mind. And then when I was using bus stop benches and billboards, I remember one of my assistant. She had like a 3-year-old, and when she ride by, "Mommy, that's where you work," you know. And so the logo and so forth. And I'm not for guys. I'm not really big on promoting Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones. If you can create a brand, you'll be better off, because one day you can sell the brand. You can't sell yourself and just your job. You want to sell a brand, and you create something that's different.
That's deep. Wait, because. So you're saying not just if you have like several dentists under you, but you as yourself, you're going to open up a practice. You're saying there's more value in creating a brand than just your name as the practice name.
Yeah, because my fear is, you know, what if you get hit by a bus? Now you got a practice there, Dr. Jones, and Dr. Jones got hit by a bus. He's never going to work again. And now the only thing you can really sell is equipment, you know, and it's older. But if you have a practice that's there, and Dr. Jones, because really Dr. Jones should be working on making himself more obsolete, and getting out of the picture, working on your models and so forth, because then you build value and you can sell that one day and people come along and you can sell that. But if the only thing you have is yourself, you could sell yourself to somebody and for a number of years to kind of indentured servitude or something. You're going to work for them for a certain number of years, but then something could go wrong. But personally for that doctor, I would say, invest in yourself, learn all you can, build a brand, and then sell the brand to somebody. You got to exit somehow. And if everything is tied to you, they're going to say, well, I don't want the office, I want you to stay and work it and just be there forever because everything is tied to you, you know. I don't like that concept. Maybe I'm just lazy, man.
No. Actually, that's so deep because you're touching on a big point that sometimes, even ego, right? Because you want to be Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
And you wanted the billboard to say Dr. Smith. For whatever reason, at the end of the day, it's not as valuable as having Kids Dental Emporium.
Yeah,
anybody can buy.
And that's what, because when the buyers are looking, they want to see if you have a system. Most of the guys with a whole bunch of money, they're not dentists, they're investors. They want somebody to have a system that'll work so that they don't have to. And if you fall dead, it keeps going because now they have the money in it. They don't want you to be the only one that can do this thing. They want somebody else. And that's what I think throws a lot of people. And I'm like, no, I'm the only one can do it like this. No, you're not, because there were people doing it before we got here, and there'll be people doing it once we're gone. And one day you have to exit, whether you like it or leave it or not. One day you have to exit, and the best way to exit is to be prepared. Just proper preparation and planning prevents poor performance. And if you plan well, you can exit well, and that's what it's about.
Wow. So, we can go on and on, but actually, Dr. Nguyen, you have your, it's entrepreneurdentist.com. We'll leave everything here. You have your mastermind group that's amazing. I'm not a dentist, but I learned so much just listening.
Just participating in my mastermind group has been just phenomenal to have you there, because and that's the thing, having marketing there, management there, operations there, the doctors there, the IT, everybody is there. So we get to bounce all of these ideas off each other and listen, and that's been amazing for me.
Absolutely, but they all can also sign up at entrepreneurdentist.com, and also, I believe you're going to start doing your lives, right? Are we going to commit to that?
Excellent. So every Saturday, 9 o'clock. O'clock, YouTube Live. So I'm doing YouTube Live every Saturday. I'll send out some invites. Yeah. But check me out, entrepreneurdentist.com.
And actually, you can sign up there, dash mastermind, or you can click on mastermind. And also, if you sign up for the list, you'll get where it's going to be. But if you go to YouTube and type Entrepreneur Dentist, well, you come up. There's a lot of stuff. But when you were building offices from scratch, which you're still doing now, you have Delano, California.
Yeah, I'm going to put some, I'm going up there next Friday, and I really, it's turning out well. It's beautiful. It's taken longer than any project I've ever done before, but it's turning out just the way I want it. Building out this prototype, and then we're going to do, I hired a new CEO, and her mandate is to do 100 partnerships in 5 years. And that's where we want to go, 100 partnerships, $100 million, and then doctors can exit this way. It's a beautiful way, kind of like the private equity, but we'll explain that when you come to entrepreneurdentist.com.
So dentists that are looking into either starting or that have a practice, they can actually join what you're already doing.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is economies of scale. If you're not scale, if you're out there alone, you really can't get the kind of, you can't exit the way and get the pure optimization that you would get if you join the group. And we'll talk about, it's almost like arbitrage or a roll up, but you have to get this equity all into one package, because that's what the investors are looking for, a big packet, you know. And once they can get that, of course, the multiples of EBITDA. So in dental, it's called multiple arbitrage. And it's not multiple because there are a lot of different offices. It's the multiples, like multiples of EBITDA. and by pulling all of these offices together, rolling them up, and making them more efficient, economical, then it becomes more valuable. And that's how they exit. We'll get more into that's that, deep. Man.
No, yeah, yeah. If you're a dentist, you have to get into this because also, you know, just buying a dental chair is different when you're buying one than you're buying 1,000.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you're purchasing, and then the efficiencies of coming, having everything centralized. You have someone that centralized, you know, have an MBA CEO. You have people that are finances, CPAs, and so forth, that are all working out of one centralized rather than everybody having to hire this person for IT and that one for HR. And this, we centralize, and now we have a core, and it brings down our expenses, and we get these economies of scale. Now we can purchase, and we get decreased costs and rebates and so forth. So a lot of advantages.
That's deep. And what I like about this, and I've been not as long as you, but with you, probably like 20 years. And what I've seen is a lot of DSOs, because you know they have a model. They'll buy you, and who knows, they rebrand you. Who knows what they do, right? But a lot of times, like you said, they're not dentists.
Right.
So they don't really care about the dentist or the practice. They just care about those numbers.
Yeah.
Where you're coming from, a dental, I think what you're putting together comes from a dentist, and you're thinking of, like a dentist that you are, and saying, what would other dentists benefit from this?
Yeah, and what we want to do is all of our partnerships for the next 5 years are only dentists. We're not partnering with any private equity or anybody, any kind of monies that are coming from the outside. We want dentists to be the one that's making these investments, because we want them to benefit not only from selling the practice. There are things like the real estate involved. There's so many things that they can get as far as owners, different kinds of write-off, become wealthy. And that's a part of our package, is to show a doctor how to become wealthy. It's, you know, there's some steps, but without a plan. Now, you just don't. I mean, some people get lucky. They go and buy a lotto ticket, and they really get lucky. But most of the time, to get rich is not just luck, you know. You have to have a plan. You know, you just don't land there. Wow, stepped out one day, and I was just bone rich, you know. It just don't happen.
No, plus, like, even the insurance factor, you know, you could put that in there. You could put legal fees. A lot of dentists can't really afford the type of attorney they need.
Yeah.
They end up with like a car attorney, you know, handling some cases. That's why they lose.
Yeah, but together, if there's 100 of us, and as a group, we're dealing with an attorney, because the one problem that we're dealing with, since we standardize, it's the same problem for everybody. So they just handle it one time rather than 100 people paying them. Now you just, so you can spread that over 100 doctors. That's the economies of scale. And that is the one principle that I found. I did the executive MBA at Anderson School, UCLA. I've studied many years as business, you know, on my own. But the one leading principle I find is economy of scale. Regardless of what business, if you can bring down, and that's why Costco, all of these big companies, they can just, everybody floods them because they can decrease the price. Why? Because they are so huge and they sell scale, you know. And that's what's happening to the dental industry, consolidation, you know. One, and it used to be, and I'll go in, this, I'll in but when I was a kid, I'm old enough now that I remember when pharmacies were mom and pop. You know, you could go in, they had the malt machine and all kind of stuff like that. And now you cannot find a mom and pop pharmacy in a holding. And the physicians used to have their black bag and they go from house to house, you know. But that disappeared. And I don't know why dentists don't realize this consolidation will happen whether we want it or not. There might be a few boutiques left, but basically, people want, if they can get good service at a lower price and someone can work out this economy of scale, they're going to win.
So it's like having CVS, Walgreens now, and maybe a Rider here and there, you know, but there's no, when you see a mom and pop, you almost don't want to go there, right? Because like, I know it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, and can't help but be more expensive, yeah.
And then you're not going to be stocked like a Walgreens.
You might want to go in there if they still have the malt machine. You're like, damn, I want to get
You're really dating yourself. Like, I don't even think that Yeah, even more places.
Yeah, there's Johnny Rockets is about the only place that still sell malts.
Though when you can go to In-N-Out and get those shakes still. Yeah. But, I see what you're saying, though, that if you don't adjust, for example, AI, we're not going to get an AI right now, but AI is taking over.
Yeah.
And either people, I know a lot of people personally that they're like, oh, it's okay. It's like you're getting left behind, behind that later on you're going to be told what to do.
Yeah, that is, the AI thing is scary. If you're not on it, because if you're behind the curve, you're losing, you know. You got to be out in front on this. And this, you know, I'm old as dirt, but I'm learning this stuff because I know you can't keep up unless you dig in, you know. And if you're not going to do it, and if you're going to do the dentistry, it's fine. But get with somebody. And that's why I came up with this phrase, be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. You don't want to be out there alone, especially if you know, let's say you want to compete with me and you by yourself. I have a big team and we can run you over. We can. And that's what the other guys, they have a big team. Either you get with them or you get with us. But you got to get with somebody. Don't get stuck out there alone, you know.
That's deep.
It's dangerous, man.
And then also, you just let it go there. But if you're a dentist that you want to expand, you want to start your practice, you got to learn and you got to do what you do. What I've seen Dr. Lanier do is go from not understanding something, MySpace, to, that's how I met him way back then, to learning about it and say, okay, we need this. And now with AI, I see you doing the same thing, saying, okay, what's this AI? Now you're running circles around some of the young kids.
Got to be implementing this stuff because if you don't, I mean, and the thing I see with AI is that it flattens the curve because now just so many things. I just use it to do all the research that I want, but I can also see how it can help with certain things that we have that are inefficient, not working right. There's certain things, and I was telling someone this earlier today, it's not that negative towards employees and so forth. But if I can find something that's more efficient, don't need to keep taking breaks and going to the bathroom, say, well, I got to punch out, I need workers' comp, you can't hold it against me. I'm going to go that route. If something can be more efficient, get the same results over and over again, and not file any claims against me. Yeah. Well, I didn't take my lunch yesterday in the block.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what
Plus,
I mean?
It's best for the patient.
Yeah.
Because now you don't have that turnover ratio and the patient feels like they have a consistency of care.
And right now it's jumping on certain things, you know, like the phones, the this, that. But after a while, I think you were showing me something. And one day it might replace dentists. A lot of stuff that the dentist is doing won't be doing anymore. So you got to get on and just see where are we going to land, but stay and make sure that you're staying on top of everything.
Yeah, dentists now, they don't know. You know, you see that video that I showed you with the little robots?
Yeah.
That they get in your mouth and clean your teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you can't do that with a hand.
That's going to be, yeah. And it's going to be, yeah, things are already here. So we have to accept it.
Thank you so much, Doc. So they'll see you on the other end and make sure that you follow the Entrepreneur Dentist. Also on Instagram, you're everywhere. You're on TikTok.
All of them, man. I'm out there.
You're all over.